Let's bring in Josh Lunenberg right now. Josh, what we thought would be a starting lineup for this tournament or for this tryout, these camp, is looking much different now. What is the general attitude of the team, knowing that some somewhat key players are not there now?
Well, I think there's some disappointment. I mean, all around. I mean, certainly in terms of the fans, there's disappointment. People expecting the golden age of Canada basketball that we've been hearing about for the better part of the last decades coming together here in this window of opportunity. But even within Canada basketball, I think there are a lot of people that were hoping, not for everybody. I think it's realistic, and those that are familiar with sort of the grind and what goes into the international play every summer understand that it's a big ask. So any given summer, you can expect that a few people just won't be able to play, guys that are either nursing injuries or have complicated contractual situations or whatever it may be. But for the amount of guys that ended up pulling out to all pull out at the same time in the same year, ahead of what will be such a crucial tournament, such a crucial summer for this Canadian basketball program, I think that's where the disappointment lies. So I think there are mixed feelings, at least internally, because while there is that disappointment, you can only spend so much time looking back and looking at the what-ifs and what could be and all of that. If you're a part of it, especially if you're on the team, if you're a member of Nick Nurse's coaching staff, all you can really do is look at what you do have and make the best of it. And there is still talent on this roster. So I think that's one of the big reasons why Canada basketball went after Nick Nurse, why they liked him and why they ultimately gave him the job. It's the same reason why Masai Ujiri and the Raptors liked him last year, is that he's a coach that can lead a lot of different types of teams. At the time when the Raptors hired him, they didn't know whether they were going to be rebuilding or going all in. They didn't have Kawhi yet, but Nick is a guy that prides himself on his adaptability and his ability to, his willingness also to roll with the punches and go with the flow. And in this case, no, I mean, they didn't know who they were going to get. In this case, the roster isn't what he thought it would be, but he's a coach who has had a history of getting the most out of whatever he's given. And in this case, while it will be a challenge to go to China and to qualify for the Olympics with this team, I think Nick is the right coach for that challenge.
I think, Josh, that that's a great point, that Nick is the right coach. I think the perception was widely, the net was widely cast that, wow, they've got Nick Nurse. Certainly now that's going to be the final piece of the puzzle to get all of the NBA guys to buy into playing for Team Canada. But where I'd really like to go is to dig down a little deeper into the FIBA structure, which we've also seen south of the border really affecting the American team. I mean, the American team, when you look at the lineup that they're going to be fielding, just like in Canada, they certainly don't have a lot of their marquee players. And one of the criticisms of the FIBA format is now you're asking people shortly before their professional season. And by the way, as everyone's aware, the NBA professional season is much longer than any other professional season in the world for far more money. But you not only have this long window of 3 to 4 weeks that players have to commit in their off season, they've got to travel long distances. And in Canada's case, they're going to go to Australia before they go to China. Comment, if you would, Josh, about the impact of FIBA's system in being able to draw the marquee players to play for their national teams.
Yeah, that's a really good point, and I think that's the issue here. It's a FIBA issue. It's not a Canadian issue. It's not limited to Canada anyways, because we've seen what's happened with the U.S. And I know it's easy for some people to go back to, I mean, it's habit for a lot of people that have been used to set for several years asking the question, why don't the top Canadian players want to play for Canada? It has been an issue in the past. I don't think it's the issue here, because you look at that invite list that Canada Basketball put out a few weeks ago. The term invite list is a little bit misleading, but basically Canada Basketball would have had to be been in touch with everybody leading up to that list. they would have had to ask everybody, gauge what their level of interest was. And the guys on that list were the guys that expressed some level of interest in either playing or being at camp, being involved in the program in some capacity this year. And the only name that wasn't on that list was Andrew Wiggins. So these guys want to play. You mentioned what the American team is going through right now. I mean, I tweeted this out yesterday. There were 27 players that made the All-Star team last year. 20 of those players were American. Only 3 of those 20 American All-Stars are playing for the U.S. this year. Kemba Walker, Kyle Lowry, and Chris Middleton. So they're having the same problem, and it is, I think, I mean, there are a lot of reasons. First of all, there are a lot of reasons why a player might decide to play for their country, and there are a lot of good reasons why they might decide not to play. So it's hard to generalize because each player has their own individual reasons. But yeah, I think if we're zooming out a little bit and asking the question, why are elite NBA players, regardless of their country, where they come from, why are they reluctant to play internationally this summer? I do think when you look at the FIBA format, their system, which they did change over the last few years, there are a number of issues here, and you mentioned most of them, is that 6 weeks, which is what Canada and the U.S. are asking players to commit to, 6 weeks is a long time, especially when you consider the time of the summer that ask is out there for, is being given. It's right before training camp. In fact, if you go to the end of this tournament, for the teams that go to the end of the tournament, by the time you get home, you only have a week off before NBA training camp starts. So that's a huge ask. And then the travel as well, as you mentioned, it's not around the corner. It's around the world. It's China. So I do think it's a bigger ask than usual. And even for guys like, I mean, Tristan Thompson is a guy that has committed to Canada in the past. You can't say he doesn't want to play for them. He once in 2016, days after making it to the finals with Cleveland, flew to the Philippines to compete in a last chance qualifying tournament for Canada. Dwight Powell plays every year. RJ Barrett is a guy, I mean, obviously he's committed to the program. His dad runs the program. So it's not necessarily a matter of interest level. I just think the ask was really significant this year. And I do think if FIBA wants the best players in the world, NBA players, to participate in these big tournaments, and they should, they need to take a look at this and see what they can do, what changes they can make to make it more feasible for those players in their schedule.
Josh Lundberg joins us from TSN, talking about the Canada team that's getting together and organize themselves to take a run at an Olympic qualifier spot. Josh, is from what you've been watching, there'll be some names we're not as familiar with as NBA players. Who have you liked so far? Perhaps some have been singled out, perhaps by Coach Nurse.
Well, I mean, there are the guys that have been around this Canadian basketball program for what seems like forever now, and as young as some of them are. I mean, Corey Joseph doesn't even turn 28 until the end of the month. Yet, I mean, he's been around since he was 15 years old. This will be the 11th FIBA tournament, FIBA event that he's participated in with Canada basketball, both junior and senior team. Of course, Kelly Olynyk has been around for a really long time. And a couple names that, I mean, might not be recognizable to everybody because they're not on the NBA stage, but Melvin Ejim and Brady Heslip have been part of this program for just as long as the two guys that I mentioned, and they've been really important, really key to the success that this program has had, especially recently. And I would argue that Ejim and Heslip are more responsible for the recent success than even Joseph or Olynyk, because those are the guys that have been participating during these tournaments, going back to FIBA's less than ideal format change, the fact that they have year-round tournaments now, while those NBA guys have been busy during the season. It's been the likes of Ejim and Heslip and a cast of over 30 players that have contributed to what was a 10-2 record to get Canada back into the Worlds for the first time since 2010. So those four guys are going to be key. A couple guys that Nick Nurse raved about today, a couple of the younger guys, Kevin Pangos, who of course has had plenty of success overseas the last couple of years, and another point guard, Andrew Nembhard, going into his sophomore year with Florida. A couple of guards that I think Canada is going to ask a little bit more from, at least in terms of the versatility. Nurse saying that Nemhard is the guy who can move to the two and maybe even the three. I think when you look at what Canada does have this roster, while there is talent, it's a little bit imbalanced. There's a lot of point guards on this team. I mentioned a bunch of them. There's some good depth in the front court as well, Chris Boucher and Kem Birch, a couple of guys that I didn't mention. But where this team is probably lacking positionally is on the wing. That's where they could have used R.J. Barrett. They could have used Wiggins and Dylan Brooks, who's injured, and a number of other guys. So I think you lean on Edgem a little bit more than maybe you would have otherwise. You try and see what kind of creative lineups you can find and moving guys to different positions, and that's another reason why I think Nick Nurse is well suited for this job, because of how innovative he is. So they're going to have to get funky with some of these lineups, but I do think, I mean, this is a team that's going to play really hard. I think they've got an advantage with their continuity. Instead of working in young guys that haven't played with each other before, you really do have a core that is used to playing with each other every summer. So there's chemistry there. They're going to be really good, really versatile, I think, on the defensive end. They're just going to have to figure out a way to score, I think, and a way to get some guys some experience on those wing positions.
I think you've hit it very well, though, Josh. The pieces are there. They're just not the pieces that we thought were going to be there. They're different pieces, but you've got an innovative coach in Nick Nurse, who is a very much a glass half full kind of guy, who's yep. going to embrace the people he has, be very, very positive and very, very empowering to these guys to get out there and play their best. And you mentioned Kevin Pangos. I mean, Kevin can flat out play. Like, he is a borderline NBA player. Like, he easily yep. could be on an NBA roster. Same with Melvin Edgem. I mean, these guys are NBA-level players that are very successful at the highest level internationally. So they're ideally suited for this game. So I'm actually quite excited about this team. They've got a lot of kids who can play, but also high-character guys who really like each other and are really excited about the opportunity to play for Canada. You know, before we let you go, Josh, so we got to move to the Raptors just for a real quick question. It's been such an odd offseason in the NBA, really unprecedented offseason with the machinations that have taken place. If you had to read the Raptors right now with the moves they've made, losing Kawhi, as they get ready to start thinking about heading into camp, how would you summarize this Raptors team going into the 2019-2020 season?
Well, I mean, the reality, as unfortunate as it is that they've taken a significant step back, obviously losing a superstar in Kawhi Leonard and a second starter in Danny Green. They're not a championship contending team as they're currently constructed, but it's not all or nothing. And I know that's the way that it seems for a lot of people. And that's sort of just the age that we're living in, where things are either doomsday, disaster, or it's great. And it's in the case of the Raptors, I think it's sort of somewhere in the middle. They're not a contender, but they're also not a lottery team either. They're going to make the playoffs. They're going to be competitive, especially in what's looking like a wide open Eastern Conference. Nobody's really run away with the thing. I think in the West, obviously, you've got the LA teams and Houston, a few teams that have made some really big moves. Milwaukee took a little bit of a step back. They lost Brogdon. They're going to be really good, obviously, and Philadelphia is right at the top there, too. But when you look at the other teams in the East, there are a lot of question marks there, too. Boston and the major shakeup, swapping Kyrie for Kemba, essentially, and losing Al Horford. I'm not sure that they're any better than the Raptors are right now. So I think I'm not sure how popular this opinion is, but I don't think the Raptors are really any worse off than they were before making the trade. No, you don't have DeMar DeRozan, and he scored a lot of points for the Raptors, but you have Pascal Siakam, who's developed into a legitimate second all-star type player next to Lowry. You could even make the argument that Siakam, given his age and his versatility and his two-way upside, that he might be as valuable or more valuable than DeRozan was. So I think you've got a team that has the same sort of upside as that team did, the 50-plus win team, potentially a team that could win a couple rounds. And I think the floor is probably similar as well. So I think they're going to be good, and this is very much a transitional year for them with a lot of those guys – entering their final year of their contracts, and then Masai Ujiri is going to have a lot of money, a lot of flexibility in which to go in any direction that he chooses.
Josh, as always, great stuff. We'll catch up with you again as we get closer to the tourney.
All right, guys. Talk to you soon. Take care.
Thanks, Josh.